Welcome to Losing a Child, Always Andy's Mom. On this podcast, we journey through the devastating experience of the death of a child. Grief is seldom discussed openly in our culture, and the death of a child makes people feel even more uncomfortable. We approach the topic openly and honestly, speaking to people who have lost loved ones and experts who help care for them. Whether you are a parent experiencing loss or someone who wants to support another going through this tragedy, this podcast strives to offer hope and help.
Welcome to episode number 236 of Losing a Child, Always Andy's Mom. I'm Marcy Larson, Andy's mom. Today's podcast is a replay of the live stream that we did this week on Facebook and Instagram. And I do want to apologize because we certainly had some technical difficulties. Gwen's internet was going in and out. I cut some of the worst parts out, but you will notice her kind of crackling in and out and some awkwardness. And then also Eric has a little cold, so he's kind of coughing throughout. So I apologize for both of those things. But overall, I think it was a great discussion. So I hope you will stay tuned and listen anyway. I also want to bring up our next live stream. So the next live stream will be Monday, April 29th at 7 o'clock p.m. And this one, we are going to talk about grandparent grief. So if you know a grandparent who lost their grandchild who might want to come on the podcast or offer some little insights, maybe write an email, something like that, if you think they might want to participate, please email me at marcy@andysmom.com. Obviously, we've got a few weeks to try to get things together, and I don't know exactly how it's going to work, but I would like to get some participation from grandparents, and I'm not quite sure what that'll look like. So just stay tuned, and you'll be able to hear more as well. But right now, just listen to Gwen, Eric, and I talk about grief and when life feels like it's out of control. Welcome to the Always Andy's Mom podcast. This is, I don't know what episode we're on now. I think number 240 something. If you notice, if you're watching, we have a couple of extra people here today with me. Obviously, we have Gwen, who is always on for our live stream. So welcome, Gwen.
Thank you.
But I also have Eric with me today. And we have Eric along. So this is episode number 236, by the way. So episode 236. I have Eric on with us because it was Eric's idea to do this as our podcast subject today. So the subject today is when grief feels like it's out of control, which after you lose your child, it does feel like your world is just spinning out of control and you have no control over what's going on. So he thought this would be a great topic to talk about. So I've got him on with us.
You know how in your marriage or when you're at work and you come up with a great idea and then people say, oh, why don't you make sure that happens? That's why I'm here.
So yeah.
Good. Yep. You spoke up and now you're here.
And it's also a little bit my fault because we were at the Big Ten basketball tournament all week last week. So we were there Wednesday through Saturday. And I tried to kind of post some questions through the week to get some responses. But because we were so busy watching basketball, I wasn't great at getting them all in. And in fact, the last one I thought I put in this morning and it turns in I put it in an hour ago because it didn't even work. So that is another thing, reason we don't have as many people that wrote in their comments to talk about today. So that means there's more comments for Eric, I guess.
And we're also wearing matching green.
Oh, we are wearing matching green. I didn't even realize that, but we are. We're matching today. So anyway, thank you for joining us today, Gwen. And I'm going to let you just kind of start out because I know you
okay.
We made some comments on some things that you want to talk about. Well, so go right ahead.
I mean, in general, grief is something that is a loss of control, but also a lack of understanding because in our minds, there is no way to make sense of it. And anything that we don't understand, we have a problem with. And I know, you know, your son's at the Aviation Academy. I only take airplanes because of the convenience. But I know nothing about aviation. So every time I make that step from, you know, on the jetway to that hunk of metal, I think, how is this going to lift? I don't understand it. So my palms get sweaty. And now, I mean, it used to be that pilots used to shake your hand. I mean, after September 11th, they don't anymore. But I used to fear that my hands would be all sweaty because I just don't understand it. And the whole entire time, I'm not in control. And now it's loosening up a little bit. But after September 11th, the pilots would be behind locked doors. And you couldn't see them. Are they drunk? Who are they? How old are they? Are they, you know, I needed to make an assessment and I had to trust them. And oftentimes I think this is what grief is like. You stepped into something you completely don't understand. And you're on it and all the doors are shut and you're sitting there going, what the bleep am I supposed to do? Right?
You know, it's really, really funny that you use that as an example because, of course, we just flew to Minneapolis and back. Mm-hmm. And when we landed in Minneapolis, Peter turned to me and said, you know, it's so much easier for me to ride on an airplane now that I've gone to the aviation school for the last 4 years. He said, you know, I always used to be really nervous getting on a plane because I didn't know how it worked. And now I know exactly how it works. And I wasn't nervous at all today. So I thought that's how ironic is it that you used that analogy today? And Peter gave me the exact same thing. Like, and then he said, aren't you always nervous with getting on the plane? And I said, not really. I don't really think about it. But he was like you, and that he always thought about it and questioned it and wondered, how is this working? And now that he knows exactly how it's working and all the physics behind how that works, he feels comfortable. Anyway, good analogy.
Well, we should teach you how escalators work.
For fear of escalators.
I do not do well on escalators, and he has fun teasing me about it. So your internet seems a little bit funny right now.
I'm not sure why you're doing
that. Hopefully it comes back because it was good earlier.
Am I not there?
Oh, and now Gwen is totally gone. So we're going to hope that Gwen comes back since she's the one that kind of prepped some things to talk about on the episode. But why don't we just go to you, Eric, as to why you thought this would be a good topic and something that you wanted to talk about here.
Well, I had been listening to podcasts recently, and it was one of the statements they made was kind of a throwaway line, was that you control nothing in life, but you influence everything. And I thought that was simple yet profound. And if you think about it, whatever it is, whatever aspect of it is your life, you really truly have no control over anything. Like you could say, well, I have control over my health, but you don't really. You could have something fall on your head. We've obviously had trauma happen to us. You can influence it by, you know, not smoking and exercising, things like that. So you can influence everything. But you actually control truly absolutely nothing. You don't control.
Am
people.
I the only one on here? I'm very confused.
Okay, you're back. So anyway, Eric was talking about how you feel that how we really truly don't have control over anything in life, but we can influence. Mm-hmm. Anyway, why don't you better give her a little bit of a recap because she didn't hear at
basically
all.
Basically, the statement is very simple, but it's profound in the sense that you can't control anything, any part of your life, anything that happens during a day, anything that occurs. You have no control over it. I mean, once you have children, you realize this, right? That you have really no control over what they do. You can absolutely influence them in how they respond to situations, but they're still the ones who are the ones who are responding and doing whatever it is they do. So again, you don't control any bit of it. You know, as soon as you're pregnant, you realize that you're a parent and you don't have control over how the pregnancy goes. Uh-huh. You can influence it. And so when you start thinking about that, almost everything in life really changes how you can look at it, whether it's your situation at work or whether it's, you know, your relationship with people or going to the grocery store, like I mentioned before, your health, you can't control it. You can only influence it. Mm-hmm. And then you have to, for someone who is a controlling person who wants to have control, you have to recognize that you truly never really have control. It's all, at most it's an illusion, or self-deception. And so I think it's very important to know that yes, you can influence how people respond to you. If you're a jerk all the time, people are going to be kind of jerk back to you. But you can't make that person be nice to you, right? Even though you may give them every reason to by influencing them positively. So anyway, so that's just kind of my thought is, and certainly when you have a loss, you've lost control of some aspect. I mean, either the event or the events leading up to it or whatever. And then, and how things go afterwards, mm-hmm. your relationship with your, you know, with your spouse, your kids, it's, you don't control any of that or how it progresses and how you're feeling. You can't really control that. You can only try and influence it and make it different. So I don't know. I just thought that was, you know, you can certainly do from a spiritual standpoint too. Like, you know, you can say, well, there's no control anywhere in the universe, or you can say, well, God's in control, but either way, you don't have control. And I think the reality is that you never have control of anything.
Right.
But again, you can just influence.
Well, and I think right. though, then it, you realize it when something yeah. devastating like this happens, like child loss, you realize that you didn't have mm-hmm. control, that you don't have control, but it is kind of a profound thing to think about that you didn't really have it in the first place, even when they were alive. Really, truly. Right. But you did think you did, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you think mm-hmm. you have control for sure. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, we somehow think that if enough love and enough this and enough that, and you take the any safety precautions, you do all that, that somehow bad things don't happen, or that we, like, you know, we're influencing it, but we're influencing it with some level of control, and we're not. We're
right.
You know. But I do think what I was mentioning, the lack of understanding, I do think sometimes that's why people need the community. Like we talked about last live stream, like you need people who have been down that road to, you know, yeah. glean from, like, this group is so important, and the people here, you know, and it does say that a couple people's comments were, I need to listen to other people so I feel normal. And, you know, reading and searching. And that's how you even started this podcast. You were searching to have some level of understanding of, hey, someone tell me how I'm going to survive this.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And then I found out that mm-hmm. nobody really could.
Yeah. Right.
Well, and that brings me, one thing that I really wanted to bring up today is I did want to bring yeah. up the fact that our Starlight groups that I facilitate are starting up again on Tuesday, April 9th mm-hmm. will be the first session, and it goes Tuesdays for 6 weeks in a row. And there are two different time slots that we're offering this time, and I'm facilitating both of them. And again, to all of you, these are absolutely 100% free. So you don't have to pay anything for mm-hmm. them. They just get donations from people here in the community, in the Grand Rapids community, and for their in-person groups. And now they have me doing these virtual groups. And now we're doing two times, just because it was really hard for a lot of families, especially if you have younger kids, I think, to try to do those in the evening. So we have split it now, and there's one in the morning and one in the evening. So the morning one is at 9:30 Eastern time in the morning on Tuesdays, and the evening one is at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. So if either of those seem like something that you would be interested in, you can go to the website, starlightmin.org, and contact them and just say that you are really interested in doing one of those virtual support groups. And again, those are faith-based groups, and they're will be run by me. And hopefully, I mean, they've been fantastic in the past, so I know they will continue to be fantastic in the future. The amazing Gwen here helped to write the curriculum, so we know that's good. And then the other second thing is that I had talked about Luella's Lodge in the past, because Luella's mom was on, and how she's got this lodge that she's doing retreats for. And I signed up to be at one of those retreats, so it's going to be kind of for Always Andy's Mom listeners. It doesn't have to be, but you can sign up if you're an Always Andy's Mom listener, and I will be there. So, and that is this September, the Thursday, the 12th through the 15th. So any interest in either of those? Now that one will have a cost. That one is not through Starlight. That is through Luella's Lodge, and I've paid my money in, and I can't remember what it was. I had $100 deposit. I know that. And so if you are interested in going to that, that's about an hour and a half east of Indianapolis, Indiana. So those are a couple of opportunities to kind of be with other people in community to kind of help you to understand just a little bit more.
Awesome. Shall we look at like some of the questions that we had and kind of go through
Absolutely.
Those?
Absolutely.
I had some thoughts with thinking of the first question. You know, what areas of your life in particular are out of control early in your grief? And there were two comments, but I really, reading one of them just talks about making small decisions every day, like just minute by minute, what clothes am I going to put on? Am I going to wash the dishes? Am I going to answer the phone? And I love that because we just have to just say, okay, it's almost like, what do I have to do? And we remind ourselves, I'm going to breathe right now. And I, because it's too much. It's too much to think about everything. So you really do have to break it down into small pieces of what can I, you know, the other question.
I remember that, like, having somebody help me do my hair. I mean, I couldn't
and
even
so
it, do that.
To me,
I couldn't
sometimes
even do my own hair.
Yeah. It's not so much what I can control, but what can I handle? Like, what can I actually physically do? Because everything else is so, it's also overwhelming.
Right. Absolutely.
All right. So that was kind of the
one of the things
comment.
That I. Yeah.
Oh, and
I have a thought with that. That I could only do.
I feel
a
like we're really choppy today.
Day,
I'm sorry, guys. I'm very sorry. So in the early stages, I remember that I could only do one simple task in a day, and that was exhausting. That is so true. That is so true that she wrote that. And it was just little things like, okay, I'm going to take a shower today, or I'm going to try to brush my teeth today, or really, really little things. Absolutely.
Yes. Go ahead. One of my thoughts with those early days is thinking the question, what do I know? What do I know? And I know that people love me. I mean, just even simple reminders like that, because then that, because the fear, our overactive thoughts of fear make everything feel out of control, right? It just leads to, if we feed into that fear, so we have to kind of narrow it down sometimes to remind ourselves in those early days, what do I know? I know that people love me. I know that today I do need to do a few dishes, or I'm going to take a shower, or I'm going, you know.
Yeah. You know, what's funny too, is you say that reminding yourself of a truth, because I've had Anne was on recently, and other people that have been on have said they remind themselves, the truth that they remind themselves of is God is still good, right? Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't feel like that. And if you want to say that one, just one phrase to yourself, just one reminder of, you know, that people still love me, or God is still good, or any one of a number of simple kind of phrases to kind of just repeat to yourself again and again, that can be helpful to just try to ground where you are at the moment.
Right.
Because it does feel like life is spinning.
Yeah. Well, you know, without going into too much, we had a medical emergency this last week with our daughter who delivered her first child 4 weeks early. And my daughter had preeclampsia. And so there was high blood pressure and there was a lot of different things going on. She spent about 5-6 days in the hospital. And I kept having a reminder, what do we know? We know you're in the best spot. We know that there, you know, we know that there's medicine. We know this, we know that, because the fear and just feeling so not understanding it is really, really hard. Melissa said her only goal was to get out of bed. And that was hard. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
And one of the other things that answering that question, like, what do I know? Sometimes if you have other children, you say, I have to take care of my other kids.
Oh, and Demetra just wrote in, I remember when I just kept asking myself, how is this my life now?
But see, that is so out of control. You know, like, I don't know. So maybe So my
You know, it's funny too, because I had someone else on recently whose son died of COVID and had, there were so many complications. And she kept saying, I kept thinking to myself, just slow down for just a minute. Just everything needs to just slow down for a minute, because it just, everything was just spinning and spinning and spinning. And this is as her son was very rapidly deteriorating, but it doesn't stop then, right? As things like all of a sudden now your child is gone and now you have to plan this and plan that. And you just want everything to slow down because it does feel like you're just in a complete spin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So Karen just wrote in, we truly understand that we cannot control everything. In some ways, that can be a freeing thought. I have stopped trying to control things. Instead, living in the moment, not worrying about the future as much as I did. That is so true. And that goes back to what Eric said as that podcast he was listening to and the comment on, you know, this is just a... you know, whatever it says was that you said about not being in control and just being able to influence. That's what
influence
it was.
Influence and respond. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Control nothing, influence everything.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, I think that comes to forefront once you have something like this, because you realize how little control you have over anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love how Karen wrote that it can be freeing though, because I'm so glad to get that aspect of it, because that is a good way to think about it, because it's hard to think about it that way. I always want control.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You don't want people to treat you a certain way. You don't want things to happen in life. You want to protect everything to be safe or whatever it might be. And you really truly can't do any of those things really. Again, you can only influence them. And so once you recognize that you don't have the control, you don't worry about that. Then you just worry about how you are in the moment, as opposed to trying to just make sure everything else is working the right way. Just work it back. Cause you can certainly influence how you're going to control how you're going to behave or respond to things. Mm-hmm. It just makes it a lot simpler because there are too many other factors that go into play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Stacy asked, you can control nothing and influence everything. So that's what it was. You control nothing and influence everything or anything. Yeah. It is a beautiful kind of freeing thought.
Mm-hmm. Part of the statement that maybe she missed at the beginning that she was asking about is influence and respond was also part of what you read, Eric, of, you know, we get to choose how we respond to things and what am I going to do now and how am I going to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, if you look at it biblically, you obviously have no control. God's in control of everything.
Yeah.
Any faith that you're not actually, you're not even expected to control things. I mean, that's only the whole point is that your goal is just to guide people towards what you think is what is the best path, but not to actually, you know, close the deal. you're just to make sure that people you help them as much as they can. And that's really all you're expected to do. You're not expected to, you know, make the decisions.
Well, and another reason I wanted Eric to come on too is that I think for dads especially, this is really hard. Yeah. Really hard. I mean, I think as moms, we want to be in control, but as dads, you are really, you make yourself the protector of the family, right? Mm-hmm. The mom is the nurturer and does the caregiving, but the dad is expected to be the protector. Mm-hmm. And when you're expected to be the protector, that means you're in control.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's also why that struck you so much.
Yeah. And I would only say that I think both they're, I think it's just different ways of trying to look at the world to control it. I think women look at a different way in general and men look at a different way, but essentially you still want control, but for sure. As far as men go,
I think we all want control, but as the protector, your child dies, you feel like, well, I failed to protect them.
Yeah.
Because my husband's comment this week was dad's always been, your daughters look to you like my dad can fix anything. Yeah. Like I'll call my dad and dad couldn't help with this. Like there was nothing he could do. Right. Yeah.
No, you definitely, I mean, certainly
that's why I think that you can feel the lack of control even a bit more in some ways than a mom. Yeah. I think it's different.
I mean, you're expecting whether you're asked or not, you expect to fix things all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes,
I mean, the toilet breaks, what do? We wait till dad gets home. Right. Cause dad fixes it. I mean, sometimes I'll do stuff, but I
that's
also
my favorite
know,
job, by the way,
yeah.
I also know that if I wait long enough, he'll be home and fix it. And so it's hard when there is something that you can't fix, that you absolutely can't control, and to admit that you can't.
And I would say that with the loss, it was something you already knew, but that, you know what, I didn't, you weren't expecting me to fix things.
No.
Because they were unfixable.
No.
And so that's the thing. Like, you can't control, you know, how you're feeling that day or something like that. I can't make you better. So yeah. The last thing I do, the worst thing I do is to try and make it better, or just like cheering someone up.
Well, so, yeah. It's like,
those are the sorts of things that you learn that you.
Yes. And that's why so many things that people do aren't helpful, because they think if you just do these things that then you'll be happy or better. And
it's, yeah, I know.
That does
I
not
mean, that's
work.
what has been a struggle with my own dad. And I think because mm-hmm. it's the dad way. The dad way is to fix things and to make mm-hmm. it better. And so he's was always trying to like cheer me up mm-hmm. after Andy died, and like, stop trying to cheer me up. It's not really that helpful to me, you know, mm-hmm. And that anyway, it's not yeah. his fault. It's just kind of the way he's made and the way he feels like he needs to be. And it's been 50 years of being my dad, and he's feels like he should still be able to be my dad and fix everything.
Yeah.
And it's just not. And when you don't, you know, it takes a lot to realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very much. The second question was, in what areas of your life do you still feel like things are out of control? And then asking how long it's been. And our first person come in, it's been 3 years and 3 months tomorrow. And she said, weirdly, that still seems so much out of control is when the phone rings and I see a name on the screen. And for a second, I think, oh no, what bad news is this? Wow. And yeah. I found that so interesting because, again, it's the fear, right? That yeah. takes over. And what we have to do when we talk about, we can't control if it is bad news and the, you know, how are we going to respond? But what I have to tell people sometimes when fear takes over like that, because the worst has happened to us, and now we just assume that every phone call is going yeah. to be bad news, is you almost have to talk to yourself to say, not every call is bad news. What right. percentage of calls have I gotten that have been devastating news? In all the phone calls I get, very few. So you almost have to like speak reality. And I had a client whose person died in their sleep. So then after that, when she went to wake up her children, they were so calm and peaceful looking that every day she thought, oh no, they're dead.
Yeah.
And she had to say to herself, sleeping looks like they're sleeping. This is how children look when they're sleeping. And I can see that from this person, everything's out of control then, because yeah. you know, her husband wasn't sleeping.
Yeah. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And yeah. now you think maybe you're not either.
Yeah.
You probably are. Mm-hmm. But what if not?
Yeah. Right? Yep.
Well, and ultimately that's what contributes to fear, right? I mean,
right.
fear is just because you realize you have no control and you desperately need some. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. I think, you know, you wouldn't be afraid of things if you can control the situation, but since you right. have no control, like for us, you know, driving on the road, was it, you know, is this going to be okay? Letting our daughter go out and drive.
Yeah.
All those things you realize, of course, looking back that you never had control over those things, but you thought you did, or you thought you didn't think about it as a risk or whatever. Mm-hmm. So now
it didn't seem risky. I mean, driving to that baseball game that night did not seem like a risky choice.
Right.
It really did not.
And one of the things that it said about fear is to turn fear into a list. And for bereaved people, sometimes that list is, you know, how often have I driven and nothing bad happens? How often is someone truly, you know, when the phone call comes, those kinds of things. We have to make a list and look at that list for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah, people have been writing lots of comments here on just feeling like that. I Danette just wrote, it'll be 2 years on June 5th since I lost my son. The phone ringing is still hard on me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
But that kind of relates back to what someone else said about trauma is a terrible thing, because that's the trauma response, right? Like right away, that right. fear, and that I don't want to know because I'm still reeling from what happened to me.
Yeah, Andrea just wrote in, 15 months and I still have major difficulty focusing on any task at once. So different from the old me. That is so true.
Mm-hmm.
And that is hard because you lost not only your child, but you lost you.
Right.
Right. You lost the you that you knew. And it's hard to, you know, when you've lost so much of yourself too.
Oh, yeah. Because the question becomes, I'm not going back to who I was, but who am I now that this happened to me? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I had a few comments. I'm going to read the few comments that I had here on Instagram too. Erin wrote that she still has problems when she has to be in a large group. And that is definitely true. I can feel really, really overwhelmed if I'm in a large group of people. If it's small and intimate, I'm okay. But you get more people, it starts to feel really uncomfortable. And again, it's probably because of that. You feel like you have less control in a big group.
Well,
because
you don't know what question's coming. How many kids do you have?
How many kids do you have?
Where are they?
You know, all this kind of stuff, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if there's going to be something that will kind of trigger that grief or mount a grief response. Any comment could do it. And when you have so many people there and you think any one of these 100 people could say the wrong thing that sets me off at that moment, that's really scary.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I love the word, because this is what I wanted to talk about in this level of regaining control, or do you feel, is you mentioned the word triggers, and we have to think about them ahead of time. And you already know that large crowds are your triggers. But I think some other people have given some good tips on, when I'm going to be in those situations, how can I, back to the influence and respond, set myself up in the best possible way. Yeah. And one person said, I realize after my child died, that when I go to big gatherings, family weddings, gatherings, showers, whatever, I have to limit alcohol.
Yeah.
Because then that triggers her emotions. And then that whole piece. One other thing that people do when they're going to be triggered, or they have some place they have to go to regain control, is to talk to people ahead of time who are either going to be at your table or be there, and kind of set the tone ahead of time. And I had one mom say to me, and again, I have people's permission. I ask them, can I share these techniques? So I don't want you to think that I'm divulging anything. But of all the groups she was returning to, she belonged to a bicycle group. And that was kind of her release and her place. She didn't want to talk about her son's death at the bicycle group. So when she rejoined it, she called the guy in charge and said, tell everyone, don't talk about my son's death, because this is my place. And so what she did is she set it up ahead of time to regain some control. And she needed that group just to be her bicycle group.
Absolutely.
Another one is the things that we can control is, we can control our breath. We can control when we're in those trigger situations, that reminding ourselves that I can breathe. I can't control what other people are doing right now, but I need to breathe. I need to figure out how to calm myself down. And we always have our breath, right? And if we can change our breath, we can change, you know, our own mindset and the response. And you guys know more than I do about the whole physiological part of that. But I tell people, you always have your breath and you can control
it. Well, you know, one other person wrote on, well, I've got a couple other comments here on Instagram, but one was controlling the grief waves. I never know when they will hit, and then having to pivot quickly. And I just wanted to bring this up because I was just talking about this in a little group chat that I have with other moms. And one of the moms brought up the idea of speed bumps and potholes. Okay. So when you're on the road of grief, and you know the speed bumps when they're coming, you know, birthdays, anniversaries, holidays, Mother's Day, Father's Day, those are speed bumps. You can see them coming. They may even have a sign warning you, okay? But one of the things that you don't often see are the potholes. So the potholes are the going to the grocery store, or seeing a classmate of your child, or seeing another parent whose child is still alive, or all of those things that you don't expect, like going and doing something that you had absolutely no idea was going to bother you, and then you're devastated. It has really got to you. So I loved that analogy, because I thought it was too. Beautiful. Speed bumps and, you know, potholes.
Qualify?
Oh,
what did he say?
Would manhole covers qualify?
Yeah.
So this week on our trip, I was having to run to try to catch a light rail train, and I tripped because there was a manhole and it was not at street level. It was lower, and I tripped and fell and wiped out and got my hands, my knee.
It was a great analogy for the discussion.
You are exposing all of her weaknesses here, the tripping and the escalator.
I know. He's really throwing me today. Yeah. Exactly. You know what this is for? I know what this is. This is so I never ask him to come on another live stream again. That's He's funny. Trying to make me look bad. So thanks for that.
So this just proves that you control nothing.
Right.
You control everything. You can influence her. So yeah, she has no control over what I say.
I have no. Everyone knows I have a fear of escalators and I fell tripping on a manhole cover. Thanks.
I love the potholes and speed bump because, you know, like a GPS, or if you have ever used the app, the Waze app traveling, it tells you, you know, speed trap ahead, something in the road, you know, all that stuff. And I think I need a grief positioning system, not a global positioning, but to be able to say, hey, there's a trap ahead, or there's that pothole that you don't know is coming. And my thought was, when you were talking about, you know, the grocery stores, you could just go to the park for a walk and everyone's there getting prom pictures. And it reminds you that your child, you know, and then all you were doing was going to the park. And all of a sudden you're in a complete pothole of my child will never go to prom.
Well, right. And I think, you know, too, of Jackie, who was on the podcast quite a few weeks ago now, but when she likes to go on walks, and walks really help her to go on a walk, but she's always tries to be very careful to never go on a walk when she thinks the school bus might be going by. Because if the school bus happens to go by when she's on a walk, then it just sets her off. Right now it's just ruined.
Right.
She's the stupid bus and all of it. So, you know, you try to plan for certain things, but every once in a while you kind of forget and you're still out on your walk at 3:15 in the afternoon when you planned on being back by 3:10 because the bus is going to go by at 3:15. Right. So it's hard.
Yeah.
And again, that goes with a bit of control. They feel like you've got this control. Like, I just can't be outside at 3:15. If I'm not outside at 3:15, then I'm not going to get upset. Well, you know what? You could go on a walk at 1:30 and suddenly somebody's going on a school trip.
Field trip, yep.
A field trip, and they've taken the bus. Trip,
yeah.
So you can't control everything, unfortunately.
We cannot protect everything, right? Someone else wrote that counseling and journaling has helped them with the out of control things. And that's a great suggestion. It's been 4 years and 4 months. And you know, I know a lot of people find both of those things very helpful in regaining some control. But somebody else had said that one of their comments was family relationships are still something that is hard to regain control of because of the expectations, basically, of, you know, what do you mean you're not going to be opening your pool on 4th of July was their comment. Like, I don't understand.
That was the big one. Like, you can't open your pool. Now I have to pay for a rental that costs me whatever. Because you won't open your pool, almost like it's selfish when you just can't do that. You just can't.
And that's that parents making a decision that says this is in the bounds of what we can and can't handle.
Yeah.
You know, so I asked the question, what do I know? I know I don't want everyone here on 4th of July swimming.
Yeah.
But yet everyone else makes that.
Can you imagine like what kind of pressure that puts on her? Right? Mm-mm. Because now she feels this pressure. Yeah, there's no way. Mm-hmm. There's no way that's a reasonable thing to want.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had somebody else write on Instagram too, just pondering how their passing could have been prevented had I done anything differently. So that's a tough one too, certainly. You know, just that guilt and thinking what the should haves, right?
Yeah.
That you always say, don't shoot on yourself. Like, I should have done this, or I should have done that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so.
Okay.
All right. There was anything before we get to the last question, which I thought was interesting. And I know you said you didn't give a lot of people time, but the question was, how have you found yourself regaining control in your grief? Was it a conscious effort or did it happen organically? Mm-hmm. And that there were two comments. One says, knowing it will never fully go away, there's always be moments that will hit hard, learning in those moments and letting myself cry if I need to. Doing this actually helps me reset, pick myself up, and keep going. I listened to one of your podcasts early about lament, and it helped me tremendously. since I was never really a crier before my daughter passed. You know, that just, then to me, what that says is I gained an understanding of the fact that I have responses that I need to do. And one of them is crying and leaning into those moments. And that is something that we all learn in our grief, is that even if we thought we could control our emotions before, there is no way to put grief in an emotional controlled environment. Like, you just can't do that.
Well, and I found it interesting too, because I posted that to Instagram and the response was, haven't yet, working on it. And somebody else wrote to me, I'm not in control at all. But yes, it does go back a little bit to what Eric said, is, well, none of us are. So that's okay.
Right.
So in some ways, yes, it's okay.
It
that you
is.
Haven't regained that feeling, yes, because really it would be false. It wouldn't even be true. It wouldn't even be a true,
yeah,
you might feel like you're more in control, but you're likely not. So it is better if you can free yourself from the feeling that you need it.
Right. But trying also
to live a little more in the moment. Mm-hmm.
I think it's more of the second part of influencing and responding. Like, you know, the next person said, moving my body, practicing yoga, walking outside, reading and listening to the podcast reminds me I'm not alone in this crazy journey. Then the next, yeah, thing they said is, do something every day that's an honor of or brings me closer to my daughter. That's an influence and response. Like, I'm going to, yes, respond by taking care of my body, walking outside, practicing yoga. Those are great responses. Yeah. And that
those
does
are
help
all great responses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would only add that's why you want to focus your energy on things that you can, that are helpful.
Right.
And you can't control things. So don't focus any energy, mm-hmm, on it, and just let things happen and just work on how you respond and how you, because those potholes are there, like, right. And so they're going to, you don't know when or where or how they're, mm-hmm, going to manifest themselves. So you have to be prepared in some way to say, well, okay, I didn't see this coming. I cried or something happened. I just took myself out of the situation or whatever it might be. It's okay. Maybe next time you find that yourself in that situation, you may be able to respond differently. But, mm-hmm, but the expectation that there will be another situation that you find yourself in that, because you don't have the control. You can't control your environment.
Well, yep. And the reason that that came up in this group was that somebody had something come up totally unexpected. She was not thinking this would happen. And we all said, you know, get out of there, just go. And it ended up, I think she stayed, but she felt better. I think she felt probably better because 8 people told her to go and that it was okay to go. And I think she did talk to somebody that was there and stepped out for a little bit of time. But anyway, just being with other people and having people know that can, uh-huh, be just so, so, so incredibly helpful.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before. When you go to an event, I think you learned this early on by going to an event that you didn't drive yourself and you went with that friend to that tea or some kind of thing. Marcy, yes, remember? Got stuck. Yeah. Yeah. Got stuck there where you just, like, you need that out to say, I need to drive myself.
That's right. It was some women's event or something, wasn't, mm-hmm, it?
Yeah.
So long ago now, I forgot. Yeah. I went to this women's event thing and I just, when it was a lot of people, that reminds me of Aaron's comment, uh-huh, it was just tons of women and it seemed, uh-huh, like it was a good idea, but clearly it wasn't. And I, like, just took off running. And I think, weren't you working at, uh-huh, you were working at that Plastic Surgery Associates, I think, in the hotel that was only like a few blocks from where I was. So I, like, ran in my high heels, ran. And I think my dear friend Michelle was, like, trying to chase me down. Like, people were trying to chase me down.
Yeah.
And I just needed to just run and just get, yeah, out. And I think, mm-hmm, you were about done and you took me home. But I was,
so,
but right, I didn't have a good backup plan at all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it never in a million years did I think that was going to be a pothole for me that day. But it, mm-hmm, was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Karen wrote in too, yeah, here just now, thoughtful self-reflection has helped me regain control, setting better boundaries, trying to have that, more self-compassion and practicing gratitude. Wow.
All of love those that are huge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm.
And I think boundaries. Too, setting better boundaries is really good, because when you are so fragile and trying to heal as we are, when you don't have good boundaries, you can end up getting sucked into other things and finding more potholes than you would have had you set up those little fences to help you.
Right. Or the boundaries of the woman who gave the example of the pool. If you give in, then nobody's respecting you. And then you sit there and you're just, it creates more bitterness and more upsetness than setting your boundary and just saying, I'm sorry, but this is what we've decided.
This is what I can do. And this is what I can't do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the self-compassion, being gentle. Now, when you told the story about running in your high heels, all of us could picture that, but no one in this group thought, oh my goodness, what, you know, I can't believe you did that. They all said, yes, we get that. Like, you have to be compassionate to yourself. And sometimes that fleeing or those moments of things you have to do just to take care of yourself, we all understand that. But until you're in it, you don't realize that you have to just do what you need to do to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Other comments?
Yeah, gratitude is always a good one. Yeah. Somebody else said counseling retreats. So you were just talking about the retreat coming up in September. You talked about the next, she said, a support groups and podcast. It's a conscious effort. I am working hard to be as normal as possible, whatever normal is. But just making that decision of I'm going to be connected in these things. And that's what I always say. Grief is work, and you have to make some kind of decision that I'm going to be active in the work of grief. I've made a comparison recently on my weekly videos of the fact that I just had knee replacement in January. And you go to physical therapy. But what if I had just said, you know what, to my doctor, I'm just going to see what happens. I'm just not going to do anything, and I'll just see what happens with my knee. Nobody would have thought that's a good idea. You go and you do things and you learn tools and you, I was looking around saying, what helped you? How long has it been for you? I was comparing myself to everyone in the rehab, and I got a little competitive, which it is.
So I that can be a grief problem too. Yeah.
Yep. And I did do one whole thing on not comparing ourselves because of my experience in comparing. But the part about my point was, is that in grief, you can take an approach that says, I'll just see what happens, or you can take an active approach to saying, I'm going to do what I can to help myself, to learn, and you're participating in the work that grief requires. And those people do move and heal at a I'm better, easier, whatever, than people who just sit back and go, I'll just see what happens.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's interesting too, because you talked about that when you had your knee replacement surgery. If you would have said to your surgeon, I'm just going to wing it, I'm not going to physical therapy, mm-hmm. he would have said, no, Gwen. If you're not going mm-hmm. to participate in physical therapy, we're not even going to do it. You need to participate. You need to do all of this to get mm-hmm. to where you want to be, right? You would have been pushed by your surgeon quite a bit to do that. When you are in grief, people may offer some different things, like, oh, maybe you should see a counselor. Maybe you should go to a support group. Maybe you should do this. But if you say, no, I don't want to do that, they'll be like, oh, okay. All right. Whatever you want.
Yeah.
I feel like they back off a little bit more. And I understand that to an extent, but I also know, we know that it takes work. We know that it takes effort. And if you can try to encourage someone to do something, it will be helpful. But I think people are a little bit scared to do that sometimes.
They are. I wish you write a script. They wrote a script. My insurance covered the physical therapy. I wish I could write a few scripts for people that says, this is what you need to do. I mean, and the early on is breathe, rest, figure out doing one thing every day. But then over time, it becomes some more active work that you can do to help yourself.
Well, and that's why I like to bring up the fact that we do this Starlight support group. It is free, right? This is costing you nothing. Yeah. It is like your physical therapy covered by insurance, So that's is not something and, holding you back, but it is for something. Yeah, right? And there are some things you can't do because it may cost too much. And it may be at a time you can't. Still with this, it might be at a time you can't participate. But
when we developed it, and I remember even saying this to you and Eric the first time I met you with bringing, you know, Peter and your daughter there, said, it's 6 weeks. Just if you don't like it, you never have to come back. It's a 6-week commitment for your family. You just do, you know, and so it is not even a long-term commitment. It is a closed-ended, here's a good chunk of some tools you can get. I'm speaking at a church this week in the Grand Rapids area, and someone said, should I invite so-and-so? And I said, it's not going to hurt them.
Right.
what do you want me to say? Like, no. Yeah, right. Their husband died suddenly. Yeah, let's invite them.
Right. And the worst thing that can happen is like, I'm not ready yet.
And why the hesitancy?
Try another time.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But
people are afraid. I mean, and you know, we get that. Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, any other comments that you had or other things that we, from our listening audience that's out there, any other questions that you have for Gwen or me, just go ahead and put them in. And Gwen, other comments?
Yeah, I don't really have a lot. I just think it's that, you know, planning ahead of time, figuring out, and that what helps us. Someone said Starlight's been great for me. But regaining some of that control, asking yourself those questions, what do I know? Those simple reminders of things that we can surround ourselves with. Small movements. None of this is a marathon. None of this is a something that you have to tackle this whole huge thing, right? All at once.
Right.
You know, I often use how do you eat an elephant? I mean, one bite at a time, right? I mean, how do you do grief work? Oh my goodness, one breath at a time. One moment to the next moment, to the next moment.
And you know, it's interesting. I had a woman that I've been conversing with from Australia who is on the podcast and a while back. And she was talking about how this last month she's going to go to the Compassionate Friends meeting. They had Compassionate Friends opening up in Australia again. And she was planning to go and got ready to go and then just didn't go. And I said, well, next month, maybe you'll go. Maybe next month you'll get in the car and you'll drive there and you still won't be able to go in, but you will have gotten in the car and driven there. So I said, it was a success in that you planned it and you thought about it and you thought maybe you could go. And I said, let's just celebrate that as a tiny little victory. That you made the decision and thought it would be okay. And then it turns out it wasn't. But it doesn't mean that you can't try again next month. It doesn't.
Absolutely.
And so instead of beating yourself up over not going, just be like, okay, I was partway there. I made it 25%. Let's try to go for, we'll go for 100 next time. But if we only make it 50% of the way there, okay. That's what we did. Yeah. That's all right.
And I think every Brie person can relate to this. When it comes to like packing up things or putting clothes away or whatever that is, you don't ever just go do it all in one day. You start and then you think, I can't do it today. And you back out of the room. You walk by the room for months and months and months and go, someday I'll do that. But when you're ready, then you do that, but you only do it in manageable pieces. And that's how grief's meant to be done.
We just did our toy room.
Really?
Peter is 17 years old. We had not touched the toy room because, of course, when Andy died, Peter was still 12 and they still had Legos everywhere and cars and trucks and remote control and all of this stuff. And we had two of everything because the boys always got matching stuff and we hadn't touched it, you know, and it took 5 years to do it. But, and you were working on it slowly, which I didn't even really know about. On the sly, he was doing some of it. But we did a major, like we picked a couple weeks and we finally did it. And it feels good to have done it and gotten that room kind of back, but it was difficult. And it would have been done years ago. Obviously, I mean, Peter was 12. He was starting to grow out of those things. This would have been done long ago had Andy lived. But the fact that he died, part of that house has just frozen in time. I mean, we're in his room. His room is still frozen in time. It still is. Although we've got obviously a podcasting area now in the room, so it's not exactly frozen. But a lot of it is still the same, and that's something we haven't changed. So,
yeah.
Oh, and Nancy wrote in too, it took me a couple of years, including a move, to get rid of some of Alexander's medical paperwork. It was just packing slips. I mean, it's so funny that you think, I mean, it is. It's hard to get rid of anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not sure the next statement was finished from Danette. My son lived in Louisiana.
Yeah, saying the son lived in Louisiana. We lost
him. And we lived in.
And the comments not quite finished. So,
you know,
go on Facebook and you can see the rest of the comments. It's not written there. Yep. Oh, we live in Michigan and we had to fly down there and pick up his house 2 weeks after he passed. Yeah, that's wow.
Oh, wow. So hard. Oh, so hard. And sometimes people do have those circumstances that they have to do things, but that's a level of it's outside of their control. And maybe he rented a place and they had to get out of it. It was a financial thing. But someone else said, I still haven't washed my son's dirty clothes in his basket. His room is still untouched. Of course. Yeah.
How long did it take you?
It took me a year and a half. I washed Andy's clothes at a year and a half because they no longer smelled like him. I had wished I'd put him in a bag instead. So they still did, but they didn't. Uh-huh. And once they lost the smell of him, then I washed them. Yeah.
Right. Yep. Makes total sense. You asked me if I had any closing comments, and I was just thinking about something else I had said and comparing, you know, this to my rehab. I had looked up the definition of what rehab maintenance is. It's this care that you can, or help you can get, care that can help you get back, keep or improve abilities needed for daily life. And sometimes some of these things we're doing are just things that help us in daily life. Like we're just trying to survive, and that is our life and that care. And what is it that I need? And I think some of these suggestions and talking about this, you know, whether it's journaling or anything you took from this, you one small thing may help you with what you need. But my other comparison that I made is I'm 59 and my knees, I've had four operations and my knee's been bad since I was 16. And what I didn't realize is that I had always walked poorly. I didn't walk right. So now that I have a new knee, there's no reason for me to limp and walk weird anymore. So I had to learn how to walk. And the physical therapist told me heel to toe, heel to toe. So every time I'm walking, I'm telling myself heel to toe. And I was thinking about bereaved people, and especially in those first early days and regaining control and anything that we said tonight, you have to speak that to yourself sometimes every moment, like I did with every step.
Yeah.
Whether it's breathe, trust, you know, someone else said, I'd say, one thing, what was it? Small steps every day. That's her mantra.
That's what I was going
heel
to say.
To toe, small steps every day, whatever that is, just keep finding what it is for you that propels you forward.
And that was going to be my closing comment, was just that comment by Demetra saying, my new motto is small steps every day, because that is truly a great motto to have, because you just keep moving, right? It's just like Dory in the Finding Nemo movie, just keep swimming. Yeah. We're just taking small steps every single day. It's funny, people have written some new comments in here. So I really need to close up because we're going to get cut off on Instagram. But if you want to come on and read some of these other comments, they are beautiful comments too. Eric, do you have any closing words for the last few seconds we have?
Just be careful what you suggest. You never know who you get roped into. You have no control over those things.
Yes. And if he suggests another live stream, I may ask him on, but I may not, because clearly he likes to make fun of me while on the live stream. So thank you much for that.
That's cute. Now you talk about Eric so much, and I know some of the listeners have seen him before, but I think it's good to see both of you together. I enjoyed that tonight.
Okay. Well, bye-bye, all.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. If you found this helpful and would like to support the podcast, please leave a 5-star rating and comment. To help financially, you can type Andy's Mom, one word, to the number 53555. This provides a link to GiveButter, which allows donations through PayPal, Venmo, Apple Pay, or credit cards. GiveButter will provide a receipt of your tax-deductible donation. Or you can visit the donation page at andysmom.com/donate. Always Andy's Mom is a registered 501c3 and can receive donations through Thrivent Financial and Benevity. Marcy loves hearing from listeners. Please feel free to reach out to her via email at marcy@andysmom.com or on the Instagram or Facebook Always Andy's Mom accounts. Sign up for the email list to get weekly episode links as well as pictures of Marcy's guests and their children. Together, let's work to inspire hope one day at a time.